Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I don't have any comments today, so please send some comments in. Well, on our last podcast, James Brandon and I finished our discussion of Charles Krauthammer's still modern essay, The Mirror Image Fallacy. Now, this essay explains why our current international relations are failing. So you can still hear these podcasts at thetrumpet.com and on SoundCloud. So if you missed them, get to them because they're really worthwhile. Well, today I want to begin and most likely finish a discussion of a new Krauthammer essay entitled Motherhood Missed. You can find this essay on page 154 of Mr. Krauthammer's book, Things That Matter. Now, to help me do this today, my wife is back in the studio with me. Remember, she is a mother of four and now a grandmother of 11. So this is the perfect essay for her to be with me on. So welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, it never ceases to amaze me that Charles Krauthammer could speak out so wisely about so many different subjects. It's just, I don't know, it's just amazing. And I want to thank you, dear, for helping me to choose this one. I would not have chosen it if you weren't here. So what do you think? I'll let you start.
Well, of course, this is something that would be near to my heart, you know, talking about motherhood. But I do remember the early days of feminism. And so it helped me to remember a little bit about that. This talks about Germaine Greer. And I think you'll mention about a little bit more about who she was. But I do remember the early days of feminism back in the early 70s, and how it was important for women to have a profession and not to have children. But I remember I wasn't really interested in that myself. I really did want to be married and have children. So
I know. Well, that's why I married you, my love. So anyway, well, I think what's funny is I want to make a few funny comments. I did a little bit of research. Of course, the feminist movement got started in the 60s. And by 1960, I was 8. So I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. Then it got really geared up around 1972. And of course, that's the years we were dating.
Yes.
So I heard it. I knew it was going on, but I really didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. You know, as I progressed through a professional career and all that, then I obviously had to come in contact with it a lot more. And I remember having to really watch my P's and Q's and some of my humor in front of some of the women that I worked with because they didn't think it was very funny sometimes. So, but I think it's funny how he opens the essay, and I'm just going to quote it here for everyone. This is the very beginning of page 154. It says, "The screaming headline was tabloid size. I was desperate for a baby, and I have the medical bills to prove it." I thought, that's a great opening. So he goes on to ask, was it some love-struck movie star? Was it a lesbian celebrity? No, it was Germaine Greer, icon of the 20th century feminism. I did look up a little bit about Germaine Greer, and a lot of what the biographies tell us about her, we can't talk about on the radio. She really was, I would say this, and this is from Britannica Online, I'm reading from this, is that she was born January 29th, 1939 in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. She became an English writer and feminist who championed the sexual freedom of women. Well, now, that's all I can read about her biography. But this is my statement. This is not Britannica Online, but from what I read, getting ready for this broadcast, she was an advocate of unbridled sexual experience outside of marriage. And some of what she's guilty of, I mean, she was even taken to court for some of the obscenities and things that she did. So so right now, she is a very, very much an older person. I think she's even a little bit older than you and I.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So she has a different life now, but of course, what's her big regret in life?
Yes, well, it's funny. He does say that she was iconoclastic to the point of fierceness, and she reveled in her lovers and telling about them. Okay, you can say that much. But then he says, the one adjective rarely attached to Greer was domestic.
I know, that's funny.
That's really funny. And so
she was definitely not a domestic.
Not domestic. And so now she has something. It haunts her. It's, you know, the sorrow that feels of what she feels of what she's lost, her chance for motherhood. And he says a little bit later down, he says that she wasn't prepared for this because to the uncompromising feminism of those early days, she writes, childbearing was constricting, suffocating, an enemy of a liberated woman's larger hopes. Getting pregnant meant the end of all good things. The mother generation warned us darkly not to rush into childbearing, to have a good time while we could. Then he says, I think it's interesting, he says, now like Hannah, she weeps.
I know.
And so
to me, I marked that out for myself because we've studied Hannah quite a bit here at the Philadelphia Church, because what she went through means so much. But Hannah did want a son very badly. And the Bible even says that God closed her womb so that she would have the right attitude about having children. And then she finally was given a child, and it was the great prophet Samuel who helped revolutionize and rejuvenize Israel. It is interesting because I even remember back when we were dating, I had dated a few other girls at the time, and there was only one that stood out to me that would be a good mom, and that was you. And so somehow, there are people that just want that, and there are some women that want that. But then I did work, like I said, professionally for Westinghouse, and I remember one of my bosses was a very brilliant, very smart nuclear engineer who was a woman. She had no desire for those things at that point. She really wanted this huge career, and that's all she thought about at the time. And so that really that was really going on at the time. You and I were first married, and of course we did have Rachel just a few years into our marriage because we wanted children. But I grew up in a family that not idolized children but respected mothers and children. And so, but you don't have that in today's society. It's gone. And but there's more than Germaine Greer out there that regret not having children.
He also mentions Joyce Pernick.
Joyce Pernick.
Yes.
Yes.
Of the New York Times. And
yes,
was she an editor? Is that correct?
Yeah, I looked her up a little bit. I do have some information about her. It says, this is actually from the New York Times columnist biography. And so this is what the New York Times has written about Miss Pernick, who is actually, she's married now. But it says that Miss Pernick was born in New York on May 17th, 1946. So she's definitely older than I am, since I wasn't born in 1952. She's also older than you are. It says she received her BA degree from Barnard College in 1967. So I think in 1967, I was in the 10th grade, something like that. So she's a little bit older than us that way as well. She is married to Max Frankel, and of course, Max Frankel was one of the executive editors of the New York Times, and of course, she did work for the New York Times as well. She was an editor for, I think it's a program called The Mentor, or she wrote about New York City quite a bit. It says she has three stepchildren and five grandchildren and lives with her husband in Manhattan, and so I don't know exactly the date when this was written. So here is another, I guess it's safe to call her feminist, and I think she's also done what Germaine Greer did, but only, I think, in a much more moral sense, I think she was a prize-winning editor, and, she did win a lot of awards. She won a lot of accolades, a lot of success in her life, but she still she didn't have her own children. She raised, I think, Max Frankel's children. And so of course, she has a little bit of a different take on all of this now. Here's what Krauthammer writes. This is on the top of page 155. It says, Joyce Pernick of the New York Times spoke of her deep regret at not having had a child. She felt that she had to choose between family and her career. Her choice, obviously, was the career. She said, Krauthammer writes, the long days, the undivided attention, the single-minded ambition to succeed. And this is quoting her. I am absolutely convinced I would not be the Metro editor of the Times if I had had a family. So she was really successful, but what is she living with, though?
Yes, and she made a choice. And, you know, so she's, you know, is she happy with the choice she made? That's the question, isn't it? So
yeah, I mean, she helped raise children, but they're still not her own.
She didn't have her own children, no. And
she has five grandchildren that look, I'm sure they call her grandma, but still, in the long run, I think in the back of her mind, she knows they're not really her grandchildren.
Right.
So and anyway, I think Krauthammer has this incredible insight to be able to drag some of this out and put it into an essay. I think that one of the other things he says there is really interesting. It says, the poignancy of her dilemma lies in the lingering question. If she had to do it over again, would she still rather have the Metro desk or the soft comforts and inexpressible joys of motherhood? I think that's a great question.
Yes, that's right. That's it. You know, is she happy with that? Would she do it over again? Or is this what she wants? You
know, right.
The Metro desk or not?
Right.
You know, or the motherhood.
Right. And I know you chose to have motherhood. And of course, you still had your part-time jobs over the years.
Oh, yes.
And so there were still times where we needed you to be working to help out. And I don't know if we need to announce it, but you're now retired fully. You don't even have part-time jobs now. So that's why I'm dragging you in here every chance
I get. I get to do all kinds of enjoyable things just like this, though.
Yes. Well, I'm happy for you, honey. I'm happy for me, too, because the home front is going to be a lot more organized now. But I think it's interesting what Krauthammer says here. And, of course, we're building up to a point, everybody out there listening. There's a point coming here. Krauthammer goes, in modern times, we suffer not for our sins, sin having been abolished. I think that's funny.
That's funny, yes, I like that. Yeah.
He's not saying that sin doesn't exist. He said we've abolished it, but really, that doesn't mean God's abolished sin. But he said we suffer for our ideology. I mean, that's short. That's only one sentence, and he says so much in one sentence that people are suffering for these ideologies. That they absolutely stand by, and they'll stand on it, and they'll swear it's the right thing to do, but yet they're still suffering.
That's true. Yes. It is. You know, it is like almost like, well, it's like religion for them, but ideology is so important.
Yeah.
That's what the different the feminists had a really strong ideology, and they still do. But it's kind of changed a little bit, but.
Right.
Over the years.
Right. But still, in fact, it's actually changed a lot. In fact, I'll be writing a new article here coming up pretty quick. I'm presently writing an article on UFOs, or as the Navy calls them, UAPs. So that one should be done by the end of this week. But then there is this war going on in feminism right now. I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up or not, but the old girls are fighting with the young girls. And they're actually widely divided over certain issues. And that will be a really interesting article, believe me.
Yes, that sounds interesting.
And, of course, this essay is getting me really... I'm going to have to quote some of this in the article. But he said the traditional victim of ideology is the communist betrayed by the God that failed. And so I had to think about that sentence for a long time. And really, this ideology has become their god. It's who they worship. It's what they worship. They worship in their ideology, but their ideology is failing them. And he went on to say, as socialism recedes into history, there will be fewer such confessions. Now, the point is, of course, he died in 2018. And if we look at our modern politics, what's going on right now, socialism certainly hasn't died.
No, it's really come alive. So when he wrote this, was it 2000? So 20 years ago.
20 years
ago. So in 20 years, socialism has come back to be popular again.
And I bet he would still be shocked. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's only been dead, 2 years, maybe 3 years. And so he would still be shocked. But he goes on to say, he says, feminism, a far nobler creed, commands the day, but like all gods, this one too exacts its tribute. Now, you can see that he feels that feminism is nobler than socialism.
Yes, he does.
But I think you and I would disagree with that, and I think we could talk. I don't see where feminism is nobler.
Yes, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
The way he ends it.
So we'll
article.
Just get that out there right now, though, so that everybody out there listening will know that we don't agree necessarily with everything Charles Krauthammer says. So, but he goes on to say, the early days of feminism did present stark choices. It was held, as Pernick put it, that you cannot have it all. Unfair it was, unfair it remains. So it's interesting what Joyce Pernick is saying is, I would guess you would call her one of the older feminists. She's saying you can have it all.
Right.
But the young feminists are saying just the opposite.
We want it all.
We want it all.
Yes, why not? We can do it. We can do everything.
Yeah. Yeah, we want it all.
And a lot of it is because these women like Joyce or Germaine Greer went ahead and gave up having a family in order to, become professional women. So there's this feeling like
they led the pack.
Right. They led the pack, and now the younger women say, okay, let's go for it.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting what the next paragraph that he brings up. He said, should men and women who have taken the detour of the mommy-daddy track be as far along as those who haven't? Asked Pernick. Now, this is in her, by the way, this was in her commencement address at her Barnard College. This is what she's discussing with young feminists at the college. She's actually talking to the younger women here who want to have it all. And she says, should those of them that gave up everything, should they, it's kind of like, were they intending to open the way for the rest of the women to have it all? Would that be fair? And she said, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she says it very clearly there. And Krauthammer says this, should men and women who have taken the detour of the mommy-daddy track be as far along as those who haven't? Ask Pernick. Here's what she says. I reluctantly have to say that it would not be fair. And is it fair that men and women with children lose out to others who have been working the 12-hour day? She says she believes it is.
Right. Yeah, because they put the time in, working hard, 12-hour days. And so she thinks it is fair if they have risen above and
right.
In the workplace, right.
So in other words, if you want to be a professional woman, you've got to give things up.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Pernick believes that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them you have to give up is motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens, this is what I don't understand. They feel like it's worth it. They feel like they got what they wanted, but they still regret.
They have regrets. Mm-hmm.
The big regret is not having a child.
Right.
So it's still, to me, I still think that's part of human nature where you're going to justify what you did because you can't change it anyway.
Right.
That's the way I look at it.
That's true. And then also, sometimes it seems like the grass is always greener. Sometimes you do have regrets of, sometimes you do think maybe you'd rather have done something else after you've done it. This grass is always greener type, I think.
Right.
So.
I mean, I've made huge mistakes in my life that I regret. Mm-hmm. But now I'm trying to forget the regrets because, as you say, you can't change the past, but you can only change the future.
Right.
And, not having a child is a past that might really be hard to forget. But Here's where Krauthammer is funny. He goes on to say, oh my, this brought a storm of protest from the younger feminists. Women who, under the new dispensation, get the four-day weeks and the extended family leave and expect nonetheless to remain on the same professional footing as their childless colleagues. And so that's exactly what's going on, isn't
right,
it?
Right, yes. And what's interesting is, okay, here he mentions the extended family leave. That's where you get leave without pay, but then you can go back to work. Now Ivanka Trump has actually gotten something passed in the Senate that is a historic measure that was just passed that would fund paid family and medical leave for federal employees, which is a win. She's been pushing for this, that there should be paid family leave, not just the extended family leave that was mentioned, but now paid family leave. So when she got it passed for federal employees, and hoping that it'll go for the rest of the country as well. But so I believe that Ivanka Trump is one of those women that she's an example of how women think they can have it all, because she's out there. She's a professional woman with children. Of course, she has a lot of help too. But
and she also has a lot of.
Of money.
Money.
Right. Yes, right. That's what I mean by help, yes.
Every time I say that, well, that person has a lot of money, yes. I always get chided by my sweet wife, who says, that's all you think about is money. Well,
I was just going to say, she does have, income in order to be able to do that, yes.
Yeah, you were fighting on radio. Yeah. Anyway, it's a big joke. Mm-hmm. I always look for ways I can bring that up so I can hear, oh, you always think about money, which I don't always think about money. But I do think a lot of people make a lot of money that gets wasted when there's probably other people that really need it. But now I sound like a socialist.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. But anyway, the point I wanted to say is that she Pernick said you cannot have it all, but today women are saying yes, you can have it all.
Right.
So that's what they're pushing for.
Right. And that's why I can't wait to get into this. I just downloaded the article. It's from The Spectator. About this new war among feminists. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are some other feminists that are making, some of the older feminists are making really wise statements. And I don't want to give it away too much, but they're, there's all this new teaching going on about, your gender identity, and that, you shouldn't be teaching boys that they're boys and girls that they're girls. Well, I now have a book from an older feminist that does not agree with that. She thinks boys should be taught to be boys and girls should be taught to be girls. And so, I'm probably going to get a lot of bad comments when I get this article out there, because I'm going to use that in this war, war of feminism. But anyway, here Krauthammer, saw the problem, and I think it's really interesting, how he brings out this whole thing. I mean, you really get the feeling that he feels bad for the feminists that have given everything up. You get that feeling that he's kind of commiserating with them. But then, he does bring out the bit that President Clinton also, when he was president, he tried to, crack the ceiling. Holding parents down. He tried to get rid of that. He goes on to say there at the very bottom of the page, he says, but imagine how it feels to those like Pernick. So, if the government is supporting the feminists, the husbands and wives that want it all, he's asking, how does that really affect someone like Pernick? You get the feeling that maybe if he knows her, it's only, from a distance. It's not like they're best friends here. He said, but imagine how it feels to those like Pernick. They are asked to stretch themselves and cover for a younger colleague so that she can go home and give her child a bath, a joy they will never know. Now, that's kind of heartrending. It's kind of, really sad. It says, a joy they deliberately gave up under the terms of the original feminist contract in the name of autonomy and advancement. So he's saying the contract has changed. And, actually it's actually been rewritten, as he says at the top of page 156. So maybe you can see why Germaine Greer now is regretting it. Maybe why Joyce Pernick is regretting it. But if you think about it, they're just a few. I wonder how many more that would actually answer that question, that I wish I had had children.
Yes, I mean, that is, it's something that, it's, there is a biological truth. I mean, there's a, the way, you know, there's a biological, I don't know if it's a need, but, you know, it's a normal feeling. And so it's sad that women, some women are not able to have children.
Yes.
But then, you know, then it's sad for women who were able but chose not to and then later on regretted it. It's sad.
You know, actually, Charles Krauthammer didn't actually think about the women who can have children. Mm-hmm. That, you can imagine how irritated they might get with the feminists who want to have a career and not children, mm-hmm. and are actually healthy enough to have children.
You right, know. Yes. It's complicated, yes.
It's very true. Complicated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know that when I was growing up, if a woman could not have a child, there was a lot of, well, empathy for that, you know, if they wanted children. I think we grew up in an age where people wanted to have children. Now, that may have just because I came from a Catholic family, you know. But, you know, in some ways, I think all of us siblings, there were seven of us, felt there were too many of us siblings for the house that we lived in. But then, are we going to talk about the end of the...
Yes, because we don't. I don't agree with them.
Let's okay. talk about the end. This is, I think this was the shocking, shocking part of the essay for me. So I'll let you start.
Well, it's just the way the conclusion he comes to. I mean, a lot of what he says we think is great. We agree with, but he's looking at it from a point of view of society, really, and he says. The good that feminism has wrought is quite incalculable. It gave half of humanity the chance to develop something that had been denied it in practically every culture in every era. But like all great revolutions, feminism has its price and its victims. So he's calling feminism a revolution, and he's saying that a lot of good has come from it. Well, we don't necessarily I don't believe in that. I don't believe that feminism has been good. I mean,
no, I don't either.
I mean, I think that there's just been a misunderstanding of a woman's role, you know, for a long time. And I mean, it's true that in many cultures, maybe it has women haven't been treated, you know, well. But it's not that, you know, women are equal in the sight of God. That's the point. And so it's just that the society is really put down and looked down on women at home.
Right.
And actually, many today, I mean, I've read about this, a lot of women today are seeing and choosing to be at home because being a mother is very challenging mentally as well as physically. You
know, it's a top job. You've got to have,
it's very important.
You have to
job.
Have more occupations than maybe being an editor somewhere.
Exactly, right.
But the point is, I think we had to look at it the way it really is, and feminism is actually a rebellion against God's purpose for women.
Yes.
I mean, it's rebellion. It's not a new revolution in society. It's a revolution. It's a rebellion. It's a revolt. But honestly, society has been destroyed by feminism, and families have been destroyed by feminism.
Yes, Western society has been. You know,
yeah.
Family has been really destroyed.
And so any of the feminists out they're listening to the program, we'll probably stop listening after now. But the truth is the truth, and you know, we're going to uphold the truth. Well, that's all we have time for today's program. Next time, we're going to delve into another essay by Charles Krauthammer, and I'm going to keep my special guest, Deborah, with me. Remember now, we're well into our series titled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. We are reading selected portions of his book of essays titled Things That Matter. And there's definitely a lot more to come. Now, you can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find the used copy of the book at abebooks.com. Of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. And you can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. Now, that Facebook page has been... I've neglected a little bit. I promise I'll get back to it. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.